And welcome to Sunday, the May 27th edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. 2.5, maybe 3.5 or 4 hours today, because we're getting talk show hosts that are falling like flies on civil rights for homeless people, and hey, even folks who aren't homeless, but who might be real soon. I'm your host, Bathrob Spear Robert Norse, and going to be with you for the next who knows how many hours here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is your radio station. Hopefully you can claim possession or reclaim possession, at least get your voice out here. If you feel like talking on the air, call in line is 427-3772, 427-FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz. 427-3772 is the call-in, and of course we're at 96.3 in case you haven't looked at your radio dial recently. We also stream on the web at www.microradio.net/FRSC. And if you forget any of this stuff, you can dial our voicemail, 427-4523, and you can get all this info, plus you can leave a message, and you can actually get a public service announcement on the air, which will be replayed, hopefully, at different times. We are interested in public service and do a lot of it. We don't get paid. In fact, we put our money into this station in order to keep it rolling without commercial corruption and exploitation and dominance, which is, of course, the general rule, unfortunately, across the country, except where micropower begins to make its appearance, as it has in Santa Cruz for the last 5.5, 6 years, I guess, since 1995. That 6 years almost. Wow. So, welcome to Bathrob Spears Broadside. Sorry I'm a bit late. I was running around, and I'm a little bit disorganized, as ever. You may remember from the last show, I have a Thursday show as well, from 6 to 8 in the evening, that I was playing you some stuff from the California Homeless Civil Rights Organizing Project, or CCROP, as they call themselves. They are a group concerned with, purportedly concerned with civil rights statewide, changing state laws, documenting abuses against homeless and poor people outside in a kind of a regular fashion. They're operating in too slow and bureaucratic a fashion for me, and I'm a bit worried that they are doing a kind of a grant, get us grant money thing for the three big organizations, BOSS of Berkeley, California Coalition on Homelessness of San Francisco, and LA Coalition to End Hunger and Homelessness in LA. All of them good organizations, by the way, in terms of some of the things they do, but I've observed many of these projects rise and fall, three of them, in fact, California Homeless Civil Rights Organizing Project type deals, where they're all going to supposedly unite, they get some money for it, and the money disappears into the organizations, or the impetus disappears, and it's just it's very depressing. So in order to avoid those mistakes, I kind of bring up early what seemed to have gone wrong in the past, and unfortunately the same kind of top-heavy, top-down main organizations, the three organizations, dictate to the rest of the group and end up essentially arguing about processes and mission statements and that kind of thing. It's a problem with CCROP. But CCROP in Sacramento did have some good workshops, particularly of course, a workshop by myself and a HUF activist, Becky Johnson, who also has been producing this show for a number of years. And I'd like to play you part of that workshop to get us rolling, since we are going to have a lot of time today on the air. I expect we'll have a lot of time. Hey, just get yourself a cup of tea and relax, and hey, get near a phone if you can. Dial in. We'll be happy to put you on the air with your thoughts about what we're talking about. This workshop is about direct action. Becky's going to begin by explaining it in this taped replay of the workshop we gave on Sunday afternoon a week ago, which is the reason that we played a repeat show last week on rent control instead of, or I played it, that is, instead of the fresh and new and exciting show that you're hearing now on Free Radio. So let's set that up and get that rolling. And hopefully you'll find some tips in here. It's not a lot that, well, there is some things, it's kind of some new stuff. I think that you will find it helpful. And if you don't, call in and, hey, maybe we'll take off the tape and tear into some subjects directly.
Council, another one who ran for city council have mastered your situation to actually get over here. And
as usual, it looks like the tape is giving me trouble. I don't know why that is. It sounded good a moment ago. Let me quickly roll it ahead a little bit and see where we're at. Got it. As you can hear, we're about to be run over by a train. I think we're okay now. Here we go.
Talking about a little bit what we're Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And Huff is an 11-year-old advocacy organization for homeless people and poor people. It's a all-volunteer organization. We keep no formal membership list. We have no formal office holders in this organization, but we accept no governmental funding. So that enables us to not be concerned about our funding sources being cut off and to limit our ability to advocate in that capacity. Do you have one of these sheets here?
I do.
Yeah. Okay. This is the one I'm going to be kind of following along there. And our main purpose at Huff is to organize against unjust laws or policies that affect homeless people, specifically the civil rights of homeless people, and secondarily how they're treated by social services and the courts. And since our organization fluctuates greatly in how many volunteers we have at a time, or our budget is usually fairly limited, we've developed several strategies over the years for how to organize direct action in the streets in under different circumstances. I mean, suppose you're just like one person. What does one person do? We have a sleeping ban in the city of Santa Cruz. It's a law that makes it illegal to sleep at night between 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m. It's a similar ban on use of a blanket. You can use a blanket in Santa Cruz out of doors or in a vehicle, but not at night during the same hours, and you're subject to a $54 fine if you use a blanket. These are obvious civil rights abuses, and so we've been lobbying around this issue, and sometimes it's been kind of lonely because, you know, homeless people are not a big lobby. They don't have a lot of votes for the politicians. They cost money. They don't produce money. So if you're just one person, you should be writing letters to the editor. Going down to your local city council, your board of supervisors, and government commissions, speak out at those times. Usually those are set up so they're televised. So you can really get out to a lot of people. And you can also, especially if you come back repeatedly on an issue, you know, that's a pressure on these government officials. And, you know, one person can do that. One person can set up a table and with some, you know, put some literature on it and just talk to people that come and go. Maybe circulate a petition. That's a way that you can find out who's out there that's willing to work with you. We had a time where we had one very good volunteer, and he set up a table right in the downtown area for about 6 weeks. He did about 4 hours a day, 5 days a week, for 6 weeks in a row. And he was able to, just as one person, really, and we'd give a little support for him. He was doing the lion's share. And he's able to organize a huge protest at city council where people came in and they said they all laid down blankets and stuff, you know, and that came from that. But it just started with this one person wanting to put some time into that. You can go to existing meetings where there are already crowds and try to meet with the organizers, especially if they're friendly. Establish internet links with sympathetic civil rights and or progressive groups. And this is really becoming popular. It's like picture online. It doesn't cost anything to get anything from them or send anything, and you can get support from far away that way as well. You can go to groups that are supposed to be helping homeless people, but maybe they really haven't been advocating all that much, like the Democrats or the Green Party or something. You can go there, and you can write letters to them, and you can attend their meetings and speak out, too. Another good strategy is invite homeless people to these types of gatherings and encourage them to speak out there. That gets the attention pretty quickly. Another thing we do is it's sort of like pop watch with homeless people on the streets, because homeless people get treated differently by the police and the downtown hosts in our city, but you know, you call it, maybe they're the guides in another city, but they're basically rent-a-cops, and they differentially affect homeless people. They walk up and down, tell them, sorry you can't sit on the sidewalk, I'm sorry you can't lean against that building, is that litter next to you? They treat homeless people differentially. So when you see this happening, stop and say, oh, what are you doing here? I see that the police have found another criminal act of sitting on a sidewalk. My goodness, let's call in the gendarme here and see, these butt prints might actually damage the sidewalk. And try to draw a crowd and kind of draw attention to what's going on. This is actually better done if there's more than one person, because sometimes you can be victimized yourself. But, you have to kind of feel your limits and have a little courage to do that. The authorities are not as forbidding as they look. They really don't have a whole lot of defense. As long as you know, stay within the legal bounds. You don't approach them too close. You don't interfere in any way with what they're doing, but you just comment on and on about the ridiculousness of it and how the injustice of it. Another solitary action you could do is support homeless people. When they're being ticketed or hassled, say they're cited for sitting down, sit down right next to them. Encourage other people to come and sit down. That's the only thing you can do on the spot as it's happening. You're walking along, you see this. There may be some consequences to that, but try it. You'll like it. You'll feel better. And so my associate here, Robert Norris, is going to talk about strategies that you can use if you have a few more than one person.
A couple of additions to what Becky said. If you're a lone person or one or two people, press releases such as this can be useful, because not only do they go out to individuals, they can be distributed at conferences. And you can send them out on the internet, you can give them to media. Some media pick up on them, and even if you just get a little blurb, it makes the politicians nervous. So, for example, there's a trial, as it was in Berkeley, I guess, earlier this month, a man fighting the anti-lodging law. We're fighting the Coffee Klatch City Council bar in Santa Cruz, which I guess everybody here knows about. I don't know if Michael knows about it, but you can read about it in here. Those are useful. It's also useful to scan the internet for groups that are under siege, because often they are sending out stuff. And things like Wiley Drake in Buena Park. This is the right-wing preacher who puts up people in his church and was sentenced to, 3 years for it, a probation, and he's still doing it. Similar things have happened to other people. Rabbi Chaim Levin in Baltimore fed the homeless, and the mayor was going to have him arrested. And you can then send letters of support or emails of support to different city houses, mayors, boards, and so forth, that can, influence that. In fact, that was one of the original reasons behind the predecessor group of the California Civil Rights Organizing Project. It was called the California Homeless Action Network. We would actually organize We tried to get people in different cities to act as a sort of a sounding board. The city came up with a shitty resolution. We tried to get everybody in the state and different groups to send emails. And we did. And we did with some success. I think we were successful in pressuring in Santa Monica. And Salinas, not so successful. Palo Alto, not so successful. Generally not so successful, but I mean, I think it had some impact in different places and certainly educated people. And I think it's, you know, it's a matter of building strategies. In Berkeley, it was successful. I think the emails you got were of assistance in keeping your fifth vote. Like you won 5-3 in Berkeley. There was a, maybe Mike will talk about that at some point during this thing. Another thing for one-person deals is you can this is something I tried to get this group involved in, the California Homeless Civil Rights Organizing Project at various conferences, to get sister cities involved. One person can try to make contacts with other organizations and set up networks. That's what I hope eventually the California Homeless Civil Rights, the CCROP, will do. They're, in my mind, obsessively involved in their own internal processes at the moment. And, you know, it's too bad, but, you know, maybe after a spell of time when they can get their mission statement hammered out, they can move forward to other things, such as real organizing. forgive my sarcasm here. Well, one thing to do, of course, is to, through churches, through social service organizations, through groups like Food Not Bombs and Micro Power radio stations, you're not going to know where they are, but through newspapers, through homeless newspapers like Homeward in Sacramento, Street Chic, through contacts with large organizations, activists in large organizations in the main cities like LA Coalition and Hunger and Homelessness. I don't mean go to the top, the bureaucratic tops of these groups, or the people who are, you know, kind of busy or otherwise working on organizational details, but try to find the activists in the organization, because they may know people who know people in these smaller towns. The other thing is just to go to town, drive into the town and go to the local churches, stop and talk to homeless people, see where food is distributed. That's something you can do. Join us, workshop if you want. This is a workshop on the direct action strategies. That's what this is. And here's a flyer if you're interested, but feel free to come and go as you wish. Who? So for three or four people, again, getting kind of rushing through this because we only have limited time, we came up with numerous ideas in the past, and Linda, who's also from Santa Cruz, I'm sure will have other ideas than you two, I know, from Berkeley and perhaps from Modesto will have ideas, plus San Francisco as well, of course. You can read them here, Chalking on the Sidewalk. This is a very vivid visual attack on the sterility of city sidewalks.
They can't issue.
Well, now there's some there are questions about that. I mean, they will catch you because that's not the problem. The problem is in Berkeley, people who chalk on the sidewalk political slogans actually won financial settlements. However, $25,000, Christopher McKinney won a settlement, and others did as well. The problem is that recent law, according to our attorney Kate Wells, defending a chalker, James Nay, is now bad on chalking. Apparently, erasable chalk is now considered in some legal contexts as defacement. So it's still under dispute. You know, and if you can take it to a jury, if they try a misdemeanor charge against you, and you can work using jury nullification, a strategy that's not mentioned here but is in fact a direct action strategy once you get to court. Courtroom proceedings, as most of you probably know, are long, tedious, time-consuming, and also
expensive,
yes, and energy, and mostly invisible. They have the advantage of sort of resonating in the legal community, getting some media impact at some level, but usually it's the authority's story that gets out and not your story. You can, however, use courtrooms to organize. Because courtrooms are, of course, the penitentiaries for the poor. That's where poor people show up, suspended license, all this crap that is really economic penalization masquerading as law. And you can actually organize people in the courtroom, in the corridors of the courtroom. So if you do it that way and you don't, and you broaden your perspective, so you're not just working on your own case, then it can be a productive strategy. Again, chalking is one process. Becky here mentions the Atwater decision, which is this horrible new court decision, which was comes out of Texas. Seatbelt woman, mom, taken to jail. You all read about it, probably. Horrible stuff. And I'm sorry, no Sacramento people are allowed in. Yeah, good, good. Have a seat.
Brought bagels.
So we're talking about three or four people strategies for direct action. Becky just covered the one person strategies. There's all kinds of different approaches you can use. In Santa Cruz, the authorities, when we did begin to mobilize people, which we're not in that phase now, we've kind of gotten all factionalized and divided. But when we had, for example, long-time protests going at City Hall for 6 and 7 months every night, what authorities would largely do was ignore them. And also, we were in a kind of an out-of-the-way place. So a couple of the key things, when you do have three or four people, try to make it in a visible place, a theater line, a grocery store, where there's bunches of people gathering, so that you can publicize and embarrass the authorities as to what's happening. If a particular grocery store is discriminating against homeless people with food stamps, you want to make it loud and clear. And embarrass people, and indeed encourage people, discourage people from going into that store for that reason. So, if laws are being enforced that are discriminate, as they are all the time, discriminate against homeless people, you want to, and here's the deal, try to catch cops in the act. In Santa Cruz, as I was saying before, we had a situation where we had an ongoing protest, but they just ignored it. And essentially, you know, it died after 6 or 7 months through, you know, exhaustion. But and 3 or 4 years before that, we had protests where we had actually massive numbers of people on the streets, and the authorities ignored the massive numbers, then came back the next night and arrested the small number of people who remained. So we were challenging the sitting ban laws in 1994 in Santa Cruz when this happened. But what we evolved at that time as a theory, we haven't yet developed it, is what's called stealth protests, whereby you essentially wait till the cops go after somebody, and then you immediately join them, as Becky suggested, as a one-person thing, sit down with them and force them to begin arrest, and then start drawing people in. Because if you schedule protests, sometimes authorities will simply ignore you. And you can do your little protest, like we'll see happen tomorrow, from 3 to 5. Everybody will come, wave their banners, and then, unless something unusual happens, everyone will go home, and nothing else will happen. That's my negative view of that. Hopefully, a lot more positive things will happen.
Can you three or four people?
Yeah. Well, this is...
More than three.
So, continuing with this, other ideas are sandwich board signs. This is a fellow down in Santa Cruz called the Rockman who suggests this. This actually was used successfully in 1985 for a woman who was on a homeless hunger fast, Jane Immler, who established the first cold and rainy night shelter. Individuals from the Citizens Committee for the Homeless walked up and down the main street that saved Jane Immler's life. You remember that, Linda? You were there, part of that effort?
Especially go to the ritzy downtown, high-scale areas. That's where you're going to be most effective.
And if you really want to get bold, you try things like the Stink In, which I've never tried, which is you take your, go into city council and take off your shoes with about 15 homeless people in the front row, waiting until something really happened. This, such things as a shit-in was used at in Chicago during the late 60s by Saul Alinsky to desegregate.
But not three or four people.
But that was a larger number of people. Becky is pointing out that I'm straying, but I hope you catch the gist of some of this, even though I'm not quite...
And I'm timing you, too.
Okay, so racing quickly through this, city council meetings can be more effective with more people. It gives you more opportunity to express if they have a limited time frame, like 3 minutes. Each of you can do 3 minutes. We did this effectively in the Pie and the Pusser presentation of
last
year.
Okay, I wanted to show you my video, and here it is.
That's the video. We were promised a television screen, a video, just as the shock was promised food and lodging.
It was not advertised, by the way, the Pie and the Pusser thing. We said it was the first annual pie presentation for the most anti-homeless city council member. We had people vote on the street. Who should receive the pie? We said the pie was being baked by the Santa Cruz chapter of the Biotic Bakers Brigade, and that the pie would be awarded at city council at 7 o'clock in a strictly nonviolent manner.
And the Biotic Bakers Brigade, people should know, is a group that pied Mayor Brown around the anti-homeless laws, and then this woman went to jail for 6 months after serving four.
We didn't want to get any terrorist charges by you know, threatening to pie someone. So, you know, but we added that disclaimer that it would be strictly nonviolent. Oh, we did get 22 police officers showed up for our pie presentation. Go ahead.
Sure. Yeah. And if anybody has any thoughts or they want to interrupt with questions or your own experiences, please do so, because that's what it's about. But I know better, so keep that in mind. There are various dramatic awards or sort of strange and comic awards. Using humor can be very effective. So, for example, what Becky didn't mention about this is the Pie and the Pusser Award, which was actually described by that in some of our literature, but Becky points out not in all of it.
After the fact, we called it.
Actually, I also called it that in some of the prior literature. But we offered the most anti-homeless councilmember a pie. It turned out to be this guy called Mike Rutkin, masquerades as a socialist feminist. And we offered it, we had votes, so we voted him in, and then we offered to present it, and he wouldn't accept it, so I accepted it, and they pied me instead. And it was, you know, everybody liked that. You know, that was universally acclaimed. And
we got so much media from that one little pie, and it was a really horrible pie. It was like two cans of Ready Whip and a aluminum pie plane, but we hadn't been refrigerated in like 3 or 4 hours, so it was all kind of runny.
I had a hard time getting it out of my beard, but that's another story. So,
and we interrupt this tape from last Sunday's California Homeless Civil Rights Organizing Project workshop on direct action because we have a phone call here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, from Steve. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how's it going?
I'm good. You're a kind of a rock sculptor, as I remember, who has been driven essentially off of Pacific Avenue and ticketed for setting up these small rock sculptures off to the side.
That's me.
You're going to court on, what's your court date?
Oh, my arraignment's on Tuesday. Oh. I go from there.
Well, make sure you disqualified Mulligan?
Yeah, I disqualified Mulligan.
That's something.
I wanted a fair and honest judge.
Yeah, and did you have any problem doing that, or was that?
No, they gave me to another type of judge like him.
Uh-huh.
But when I get to court, I'll say that I want a real judge.
Who is this? Whose court are you going to? Do you know?
No, I don't have it off the top of my head.
And it's going to be 8:30 on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Actually, you'll be there at the same time as the city council coffee clatch. We'll be in Department 5, right around the corner, I guess. I encourage you to come on down when you're finished with your arraignment, or you know, whenever you can, as well as I encourage everybody else to. But anyway, you're calling in because you've had a number of rather alarming incidents happening to you in the last couple weeks, right?
Yep. Okay, it started out where I was sleeping over here for 7 months over by Denny's, and finally I got kicked out of there and told I should go to another place, which I don't want to reveal.
Just because you were crapping on the ground and breaking windows?
No, I just go to there late at night and leave early in the morning, but somehow I get rousted.
You were sleeping in your vehicle or outside?
Yeah, in my vehicle.
And had the Denny's employees ever told you that this was on private property?
No, it was down the street on Denny's, a little dead-end street. It was down towards the end by some apartment buildings.
Had any members of the public ever come up to you and said, we're nervous
Never.
Having your van there?
No, it's just a car, a little car, and nobody's ever looked twice at me. I don't know how they knew where I was, but...
And so what exactly happened to...
You mean sleeping there?
Yeah.
At first he wanted to see my ID, wanted to know if I did drugs. He knew that this is a drug area, and the people around there were worried. And I said, well, I know the people down at the river because I've lived here a long time, Larry. And, you know, he goes, oh, yeah, I know all those people. And, you know, so he kind of softened up a little bit. But meanwhile, he said I couldn't come around there anymore.
Who was the cop?
I'm not sure. I've never seen him before. He seemed pretty friendly. After he'd stopped, pursuing the situation, he went to his car. I asked him, well, where is there a good place to park? And he told me where I should go. And so I moved to that area.
Huh.
It's really noisy in the morning.
Right, so you're now in a new secret location.
Yeah, I'm going to see where it is.
Of course, no problem. Now, actually, I'd heard that on the riverbanks, that the mayor had visited one of the camps and actually not ticketed them, but then the next day police came and
took all their marijuana away.
Yeah, I think that's what happened. Somebody said something like that.
And was this like in that general area where that happened?
Yeah.
Have you heard that people on the riverbanks have been getting tickets, or have they been left alone, or what's the deal?
I think they've been leaving alone. They messed with one girl that slept under the bridge named Vicky, and you know, they messed with her because I don't know why, but she was closest to deal with.
So you were forced to move. What time of night was this?
It was about 8 o'clock.
In the evening?
Yeah, and I told them I was having problems with my car. It barely runs. It needs a fuel pump, and I can't afford it. So I said I need to let it cool down, or otherwise it'll die somewhere. And so he said, no problem. Just make sure you're out of here.
Although, in fact, you are not doing anything illegal at 8 o'clock. It's at 11 o'clock that it becomes illegal to sleep in your vehicle. So
yeah, he did make a mention about you got about 2 hours.
I see.
He was making aware that you only got to 11 o'clock. So.
I see. Although apparently he had received no complaint, but at least he did give you a warning, and strangely enough, he told you a place to move to. When you moved to that new place, which we won't talk about on the air, did you find other people sleeping there?
Many.
And are they being left alone, pretty much?
Yeah, from what I observed.
Wow. And how many vehicles would you say are there?
About 12.
And are there people sleeping outside or just in the vehicles?
In the vehicles. Oh, no, actually there was one guy sleeping on the sidewalk.
Huh. And you've been there for the last week or so?
No, I went there the other night. I slept somewhere else last night because of another situation that came up.
I see.
Which we'll get to shortly here.
Okay. I guess I was going to ask you for a report on assaults and against homeless people, but that, I guess, is the subject of your next story.
Okay. I was standing down by the old Cooper House, the old brick Cooper House building across from the new modern theater down on Pacific Avenue.
Cinema 9.
And I was holding my homeless, disabled, homeless, hungry, anything help sign. And these two creeps out of the blue, they bushwhacked me. And I was just kind of gazing down at the ground. After a while, you know, you're oblivious to people walking by, so you just kind of look down. And
had you been getting any change from people or not?
A little here and there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I only average about $11 a day or $12 a day. It's nothing big. It's not a big living or nothing. It just gets me through the day. But I'm standing there, and all of a sudden, I kind of out of the side of my sight see somebody coming straight at me. Next thing you know, he plows into my chest where I have broken ribs, you know. And then as he starts to veer off, he uses his elbow and whacks it right into my chest where I've already got the problem. And as I turned to look at him walking away, his other buddy came along right against me and had a skateboard in his hand, and he whacked it into my chest with the end of it, like, you know, like a thruster, right into my chest.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went running off down the street, and I walked down there and got their license number off their car. And
you have that license number with you?
You mean on me now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can probably find it there.
Why don't you read it aloud?
And they were like young boys. So, I mean, I'm a man, and I don't go after kids, you know. I mean, so
well,
I figured,
sounds like if they're engaging in that kind of behavior, they're acting in a dangerous fashion, and other people have to be protected from.
Yeah, it's 2, as in 1-2.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 2, K, as in Kaiser, Z, as in Zappa, T, as in Teddy, and then 8-6-4.
2KZ864.
That's it.
What kind of a vehicle?
It looked like a little white sedan, four-door.
Mm-hmm.
And they were jumping on their trunk lid. That's what drew me to the tension of what they were doing. And the one kid was wearing a red sweatshirt with a hood over the top of it. It's all red.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked like he was brown-skinned, Latino type, skinny, and had dark hair under it that I could tell. And then the other one was a white guy with a Bart Simpson type flat-cut hairdo. And he was wearing cutoffs and stuff, but he had a pretty boy face, and they were like laughing at me, and they saw my sign saying I was disabled. But what gets me, here comes the other one, is yesterday.
Before you tell me that, did you file a complaint with the police?
Yes, I did. I swore to warrant for the arrest, and then.
How did the police treat you?
Mr. Richards, he was pretty fair. You know, I talked calmly, and
Officer just, Richards.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And if it had been like RoboCop, whatever, they wouldn't even have paid 2 cents. You know,
if it had been Officer Perry, you feel it would have gotten a different reception.
I would have gotten a different reception.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy, and also there's a Perry that works down in the information center with the purple shirts that walk down up and down Pacific Avenue.
Those are the happy,
yeah.
Hellish hosts?
And he knows who they are. I was talking to him, and he told me, I know who those guys are. We've had dealings with them, and I know who they are, their names. Then I called my voicemail, and there's a sergeant, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, that wants me to come down, make arrangements for a lineup, so they are doing something about it.
That's good.
But then the next day. Yeah, I went to the hospital and I had X-rays and all that stuff, and they told me that I had contusions and all that stuff and fracture. And then the next day I was sitting there with my disabled, homeless, No, disabled, hungry, homeless, anything helps, please. And Sergeant Baker comes down. He already had the part of the ticket already written up, the part where it says the code fraction of 9.10.050 MC, and it says panhandling by false pretense, and then it says sign states disabled. I've been in two car wrecks where I was sitting at a light, the guy hit me doing 65 miles an hour. My best friend is almost totally disabled. He's on Social Security now. He's talking about anything at all. That's how bad it is. I was in the same car wreck, and then I was in a head-on accident a couple years later. Then I took a fall off of a roof onto my back, and then I broke my ribs taking care of my mother. And when she took a fall, I grabbed at her when I have spasms around my chest, and it snapped my ribs. And then I got beat up by these kids down there. I got sciaticus down my legs. I got 3 discs out of my back. I got massive headaches constantly. I'm wolfing down pain. I got my shoulders all hurt. My arms hurt. And I take way too much medicine.
What kind of medications do you take?
At the moment, I'm taking large horse-sized caps of ibuprofen, but it's not doing the job, so I have to wolf tons of it down because they want to give it up because they figure everybody's getting it for the drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to be half sedated because of the drug problem they have.
Mm-hmm. So this was Sergeant Butchie, a.k.a. Lauren Baker, or Sticky Fingers Baker, as I call him. The reason I call him Sticky Fingers is because back in 1991-92, 10 women at least swore that he had essentially inappropriately searched them or fondled them in the course of his so-called official duties. And the Coalition to Establish a Citizens Police Review Board, which was working on a real police review board, not the pathetic toy poodle we have now, held a press conference with 3 of these women, and more came forward. And actually, the City Council back in 1992 was forced to convene an investigatory committee. That was when City Manager Dick Wilson was out of town, and when hundreds of people, I'm told, I wasn't at that meeting, attended the City Council meeting in the summer of 92. The next meeting, however, according to Attorney Margaret Marr, the people had gone and the city manager had returned, and they dissolved the investigation. So Baker was eventually appointed sergeant. He was declared man of the year. He was exonerated by an internal affairs investigation as well as by, I think it's a grand jury and a...
quite a lucky dog.
Couple of other, what I regard as essentially pro-police group investigations. And Baker has, continued along his way. I mean, most recently we heard that he had... I've heard a lot of things about him, but Jen Curry was one of his victims in January, the day before the bicyclist got the hit-and-run situation and the protest around the town clock, which we talked about on Free Radio. Jen Curry was a bicyclist riding the wrong way on Pacific Avenue, who's still going to court on this issue and who spoke on the air a couple of weeks ago, who was apparently manhandled seriously by Baker. She's actually showed me some of the injuries that are still there, like months later, through Baker's abuse. And if, in fact, her account is accurate, and she's actually still looking for witnesses, anybody who was around January 19th, January 20th downtown who saw a bicyclist being abused by police, please get in touch with HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUFF. Sorry to throw all this at you, Steve. I'm kind of giving an opportunity to kind of wedge all this in.
I need to hear it.
Yeah, and Baker apparently is up to his old tricks, and he gave you a ticket.
Yeah, he took my sign and said he had to have it for evidence because he didn't have a camera.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, he tried to get me to tell what kind of a car I had, where do I park, where is I parked at night. So in other words, he's basically trying to find out so he can give me one of those homeless tickets. They want to pile it onto me. They're trying to chase me out of town. I'm going to live in this town whether they like it or not. And
that's
all my life I've tried to keep it as a non... law-breaking person. I've always stayed out of trouble, and all of a sudden I moved to Santa Cruz, and all of a sudden, wham, everybody's trying to make me a felon or something. I'm just an average guy that's done nothing to nobody.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that you've also been interested in organizing. I've seen you at a couple of the rallies. I know that you attended the last film series at Loudon Nelson when we were looking to...
watch the Nazi film of Santa Cruz cops.
Yeah, to serve and protect.
Film.
Yeah, that's to serve and protect, showing that the abuses by the Santa Cruz police are not just limited to the Nazis, but we can see that there are abuses here in Santa Cruz. By the way, I want to let you and the audience know that there'll be a second in that film series on Wednesday, the 29th, no, the 30th, May 30th, at 7:30 up at UCSC on the Hill at Porter Fireside Lounge, Porter College Fireside Lounge, in case you or other people out there want to attend. And these films are going to be The Berkeley Struggle by activist Ken Messiah, Meshesh, that's his name, not Messiah, for heaven's sakes, Meshesh, And he is actually fighting in court the state anti-lodging law. He's a black man who was a professor at UCSC and has been homeless. And so they're now trying to drive him out of town and off the campus in a fashion similar to the way, apparently, if you're accurate, they're trying to drive you out of town. And you'll be able to see videos about, I guess, the videos he's made. He's an artist and a video journalist. And he is the videos he's made called, what's it called, To Sleep in Peace, Try to Sleep, something like that. It's a very kind of...
I'll sleep when I'm dead.
Right. Well, this is these are two videos that I think you'll enjoy. Plus, of course, Campground will be a video we'll be showing on Wednesday, again, May 30th, up at Porter College in the Fireside Lounge at 7:30. Everybody's invited. Who knows if we can get some refreshments as well. The idea here is to look into the sleeping ban and its links to other issues like the campground, like how it's dealt with in other cities, statewide, and so forth. So... Yeah.
Can I say something?
Of course.
If Sergeant Baker's listening, you got to stop eating them donuts.
Well, yeah, these police sometimes get hyped up on all that sugar. I have the same problem. I'm constantly wolfing down candy, and I can't sit down. And luckily, I don't have a badge
and
a gun.
What got me is when he was messing with Scott, the one that you interviewed that one time, because he had that problem with his daughter and camping.
We're talking about Scott, the disabled man with a disabled daughter who...
Well, that was Officer Baker that stopped him.
Sergeant
and
Baker,
at the time,
yeah.
He was sitting there saying, oh, I'm a nice guy, and I'm doing you a favor kind of thing. He did the same thing with me down there. And when he started asking me about my car, and I started, saying, well, I don't think I'm going to tell you where my car is. I park here, there, and everywhere. And he got out of me what kind of car I had and what color car, and at that moment, he wanted to know my license number, and I said, hold it.
Right.
What's your thing here? What do you need to know my car for? I'm not even around my car.
Yeah, people should know that you don't have to answer any questions from a police officer whatsoever, at all, except if you can't falsely identify yourself. If you falsely identify yourself,
I get my ID.
That's a crime. You don't have to identify yourself. Actually, it's legal to say absolutely nothing. I mean, that's what's called the Fifth Amendment. You have no responsibility to say a word. Now they may choose to arrest you because they suspect you of this or that, but in fact. It may be wiser for you in some circumstances to have said nothing. Usually I identify myself, give my name and address. That's because I'm not homeless. At least at the moment I'm not homeless, and more about that in a moment. But you don't have to do anything to say anything to them. In fact, they are obliged, if they start interrogating you, to warn you that anything you say may be held against you.
Like that at all.
You have the right to remain silent. Yeah, they don't... if they're interrogating you, that's their responsibility. Some people have the misimpression that if you're arrested, they have to read you your rights. They don't. But if they begin to interrogate you, incident to an arrest, then they do have to read you your rights.
Well, what I want to know is that what right do they have to say I'm not disabled in the first place? I mean, I'm the guy living the life here, and I've been to doctors since 1980. I've been going to doctors constantly. Now I have to go, and my stuff is over in San Jose, all stashed in my brother's yard. I can't get over there because as soon as I start to mess with it, he's going to want me to get it out of there. And now I have to go and give evidence to show that I'm disabled?
I suggest what you need to do is put up a second sign and have him come and ticket you again.
I have another, so I become a and get a jury trial.
Right, well, you wouldn't necessarily, well, let me put it this way, it's true, he could arrest you for a misdemeanor, you would go to jail if he chose to do that, but he has to have evidence that you are falsely claiming that you're disabled. I'm not aware, unless he has some secret sources that are contradicting you, that he has any such evidence.
Yeah, don't they have to prove in court that
you don't have to prove you're disabled. He has to prove that you're not.
That's what I'm aware of, yeah.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, he has to prove that you are lying about this.
Well, I got a sign in my hand that my best friend or one of my friends down the street had made, and it says, hungry and homeless, please help, God bless you. And then he put, and take care.
Right. Well, that's fine.
He put a peace sign, but
I would put a big disabled sign up and dare him to do it again. But again, I'm not outside, and I don't know if I'd want to take a bus at this point. But you might want to get a couple of other people with you who have a similar situation or as witnesses. But I mean, you have, I think, if you ever find an attorney, of course, which is always a big deal.
I can't get one if it's an infraction. They've got it.
Right. No.
Well,
actually, you can get an attorney, but you cannot get one appointed for you.
Yeah.
That's the problem. But I mean, if you ever can ever get an attorney, you have a civil lawsuit. Because this crazy law, that by the way, that he's operating under is a city council law passed by the Rotkin Kennedy Council. Scott Kennedy was mayor when this law was passed in 1994, which makes it a crime to falsely claim you're disabled on a sign. Now, there's no crime, I suppose, to lie about stuff. Merchants can lie about stuff in their windows if they want. But you try a poor person who makes a statement that they wish to challenge is under a special burden. This is an attempt to drive away people who are poor from the downtown, as you can see. So I am
I'm holding a pamphlet that I give down at that little information center, and it says
the hospitality
audience
center,
soliciting
yeah.
and panhandling solicitation.
Mm-hmm.
It says solicitation is a verbal there
right.
request made by a person seeking an immediate donation or money of food, cigarettes, or items of.
So Baker is actually fucking up. This, what he is doing here is he has made a false arrest insofar as it's a citation that is illegal. He, if you had been saying to people, I'm disabled, and you've been lying about it, he would have a basis for an arrest. But to have a sign that says disabled, as I understand it, and I haven't, again, I got to look over the code section.
Well, for one, I'm not lying.
Of course. But had you, you know, I'm looking at the situation from Baker's point of view or from the point
yeah.
of view of a third party who doesn't know either of you. Still, if you are simply holding a sign that says disabled, that is not illegal as far as I know. Again, I have to read the wording of the code section, and I can probably hopefully do that in the days to follow. And for those who are interested in this case...
I hope there's a lawyer that wants to go pro bono.
Well,
a lawyer.
I think what you need to do is go to the city hall on Tuesday. I think Monday's a holiday when it opens.
Yeah.
And look at the code section. Read the whole thing.
I think they have one in the library. I looked it up there for the other one I had.
Oh, then you're all set. Go to the library. But see if it refers to signs or if it refers to verbal solicitation, because I think Baker is wrong, and I think, I think he'll be wrong even if you were saying, I'm disabled, verbally. But he certainly is wrong, I believe, when you simply have a sign to that effect.
I wonder if I have a case to sue him.
Of course, but the problem is you have to either learn the law and how to do that yourself. I think you should definitely sue him in small claims.
I'm almost a lawyer now the way it's
you
going.
You should take consider... First, you have to beat the charge.
Yeah.
And that's the same business about, you know, disqualifying Mulligan, going into court, pleading not guilty, getting a trial before a judge, and letting, of course, us know here on Free Radio how things are going and when the court dates are so we can let people know and so they can come down, and those of them who want, and kind of be supportive.
Yeah, but this is your homeless report here. This is the guy that calls you and everybody can hear us.
I was afraid of that. You know, we don't allow homeless people on this station. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, I'll go get a house and call you back.
That's a good idea.
Tell you all what it's like being homeless.
Yeah. Well, listen, Steve, we're talking to Steve Elliott here on Free Radio. Is it okay if I say that? Did I screw
That's
up here?
Fine.
And you
I'm not unproud of my name.
And I hope you'll be at this at the Coffee Klatch. I guess you'll be around the corner doing your arraignment. And
yeah.
I usually don't suggest people go to arraignments because it's a pain in the ass, and all they do is make you wait for an hour, and then they give you a court date for a pretrial or for in your case, it would be for a trial on your infraction ticket for balancing rocks, small rocks and sculpture on the sidewalk or blocking the sidewalk or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah, real crime.
Yeah, a real crime. But you'll be right around the corner, so maybe you can come to the Coffee Klatch and you can, if people are interested, they can talk to you there more about this case. Or do you have a phone number you can be reached at you want to give out on the air?
I sure do. Give me just a second here. All I can say is, people out there, if you're women, watch out for Baker, because I've been hearing a lot about that guy, and he's...
What, recent? But you mean recent specific incidents regarding women, or I'm talking about stuff that happened
just
in 91.
Just what you said, man. Watch out for that guy.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything recent.
He acts like a real tough, brutal guy, man. Like I said, he needs to stop eating them donuts.
Well, I want to make it clear that I have no recent instances of alleged sexual molestation by Baker. I want to be fair to him.
I just have past
Right, I'm be fair to the sergeant, so go ahead.
Okay, my phone number is, voicemail, 457-9754, extension 1773. Should I say it again?
Sure.
457-9754, extension 1773.
Well, I'll try to get that information to Jen Curry, who is also she's going to court on charges of resisting arrest, although Baker arrested her for going the wrong way on a bicycle.
Oh.
And did so in a fashion, apparently, by her report, that brutalized her and she put her in the hospital with later problems, which he's now still coping with.
He sounds like a wife-beater kind of person.
I have no idea what he does.
Takes his vengeance on women.
No idea about that. But two accounts you give me, your account and the account of Jen Curry and the account of the man with the disabled daughter.
Oh, that was Scott.
Scott. You know his last name?
No, he left the area. He's pissed off about Santa Cruz.
Ah, I can understand why. Actually, you and Scott are both going to be appearing on Club Cruise in the weeks ahead. I believe you've done interviews on television, and you'll be talking about your cases there. Hopefully, this show will kind of pass on that information to the community. And you will also, I hope, be at the Wednesday Films and Sleeping Band discussion up on Porter College at UCSC at 7:30 in the Fireside Lounge. Are you likely to turn up there?
Maybe if I can catch a bus.
Okay, well, maybe
my car won't make it.
Well, maybe what we can do is we can give you a ride if you call Huff earlier in the day or call us after the show. We'll try to arrange that.
All right, great. That sounds good.
All right, maybe we can ferry some people up there.
Yeah, all I can say is beautiful Santa Cruz that I've always grown up with is disappearing, and people should start getting out and doing something to straighten it back out again and make it the little quaint place it's been, because they're slowly but surely taking over the control, that, you know, Big Brother cradled the grave kind of stuff, you know. It's sickening, and then they're changing everything about Santa Cruz. Eventually it's just going to be one big swill hole like all the rest, and then you'll have to move and go to some little town out in the middle of nowhere, and, you know, the quaint little town of Santa Cruz won't be quaint anymore, because nobody cares. They keep sitting there in front of their TVs eating potato chips all day. You know, nobody cares anymore.
I got you.
I care.
Well, I'm glad you care, and I'm hoping that other folks out there do too. And when you see incidents like this happen on the street, I encourage everybody to stop and definitely raise your voices and draw other people over to observe. Actually, I'm going to get back to this tape that I'm playing here on the air, which...
Yeah, I didn't mean to cut
no,
in.
No. I'm saying that this tape on the air talks about that very thing, about bringing folks over and letting people know what's going on. Direct action modes of essentially resecuring civil rights for folks on the streets. Listen, I appreciate your calling, Steve, and call me... The show is actually going to be a long show today, but you can try calling me later in the show, and maybe we can talk off air, or you can call me later today and we can talk at that point.
Okay. Okay, folks, if you heard this and it got to your ears, support for Steve Elliott.
And
help!
And listen, also be...
Help, Mr. Wizard!
Hey, also be advised that at 6... I think what I'm going to do at 6:45 on Wednesday in the evening is do a kind of a little... ferry some people up from the town clock to Porter Fireside Lounge. So if you show up at 6:45 at the town clock, I'll try to give you a ride.
On Wednesday?
That'll be on Wednesday evening for this film series on campus and discussion, and hopefully to provide some support eventually for a possible tent city to put pressure on city council to end the sleeping ban.
Yeah, we'll have a big tent city right on the lawn of the mayor.
Hey, that's what the song said when we came into the show, didn't it?
Hey, if San Francisco can do it in their front capital, I mean, Santa Cruz can do it.
All right.
You know, people make a difference. Hey, this is our country, not the government's.
Thanks, Steve.
Have a good day.
Hey, you too, man.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Whoa, here's another call.
Hi, you're on the air.
Well, he said, help, Mr. Wizard, and here I am.
Uh-oh, Wiz, what's up with you, Senor Merlin?
Well, I thought today, you know, that there are certain things that we can give to each other and help each other, and, you know, we're all against the sleeping ban. They say the most valuable thing you can give is of yourself, right?
Well, sure.
Well, I thought maybe you could give a little bit of yourself to me and sing me a happy birthday song, seeing as my birthday today on 96.3.
Well, this is quite a request, but... happy birthday to you, happy birthday to you, happy birthday, dear Merlin, happy birthday to you.
Hey,
how's
there
that?
You go.
All right.
I like that.
Hey, now, so listen, keep us advised about anything that's going on out there. I know in Capitola you live in a trailer park that has some kind of rent control, is that right?
Yeah, we do, thank God, you know.
Uh-huh. And the city wanted to take it away, but you guys said no way?
Yeah, now the owner of the mobile home park's getting all the, streets repaved and everything at his expense, and he can't raise the rent because of our rent control. And I think, along with, as well as other people here, that the you know, he's getting the streets repaved because he's probably gonna try and sell it. But legally, the owners of the mobile homes have the first choice. And
you got the money to buy it?
Well, I don't know. It's kind of like the city of Capitola said they're gonna help us out with that.
Mm.
They don't. I mean, I can't say they don't do a lot for affordable housing, but they're doing something kind of like.
Well, I know that rent control has been a subject that we've been talking. We're talking more broadly about rent control, of course, in the city of Santa Cruz. We had a discussion, debate between Jennifer Brager, who opposes rent control and is actually organizing landlords, and Bob LaMonica, who tried to put an advisory initiative on the Santa Cruz city ballot a couple years ago, with absolutely no help from Christopher Crone, Keith Sugar, Tim Fitzmaurice, and all the rest of the so-called progressives who were supposed to be, you know, concerned about poor people and like to make a big show of doing that around election time and sometimes other times. And rent control is going to be a topic we're going to be covering on this show, because we've gotten word that Michael Schmidt is willing to be debating Donna Dice. Schmidt, of course, is the Chamber of Commerce CEO that has been Strangely enough, one of the lead voices in ending the sleeping ban, Donna Dice, a long-term activist with TRUSC, Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz, who has actually gone down with many tenants to the courts to help them fight unlawful detainers or eviction actions. So having thrown all that at you, Merlin, anything else you want to say before I roll
on? Talking about rent control, I can't believe it. And a lot of these people, the landlords, you know, they'll all of a sudden give people little notices in the mail saying your rent's going up by $600 a month for some teeny tiny little place, you know. It's like, and it was already like, you know, $1,500 to begin with, which is ridiculous. Now they feel we're raising rent by another $600 a month, and that's totally legal for them to do, which kind of blows my mind, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know, here you're talking about it, you know, Memorial Day weekend and all these people that went and fought and died for our freedom, and I don't know, it just seems to me like they didn't have this shit in mind when they went out there and fought, you know.
I hear you.
No drinking on the beach, no smoking in line. Oh, by the way, you got another $1,000 and rent just went up. You know, it kind of blows my mind that in Santa Cruz, of all places, where everybody talks about liberal, progressive, and I don't know, it's kind of like a city council, in my opinion, the mayor, kind of like, if we wanted to make this a blue sky zone, they'd be okay with that. You know what I mean?
Say that again?
If they wanted to make this Santa Cruz area a blue sky zone, they'd probably make that
initiative. What is a blue sky zone?
What I mean is if it doesn't have to, if they don't have to do anything except say, oh, we're this, here's another reason for Santa Cruz to look hip, liberal and progressive and hip. But it doesn't do anything. It doesn't change anything. Nobody has to do a goddamn
I don't know
thing.
What a blue sky... Oh, I see. I got you.
You
blue
know,
sky means the sky
blue.
Is blue. Right. I got you.
Like nuclear free zone.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
No,
I
big
hear you.
Fucking deal.
Yeah, they are very good at doing nothing about anything significant and spending a lot of time pumping their prestige on items that mean very little.
Pretty much meaningless.
Marching with the Zapatistas, well, it's all very well. My suggestion is the Zapatistas come here and march with us. We need them, you know, rather than engage in these politically correct, thousands of mile away, pat-on-the-back type causes. We need to make sure that something happens here around issues that affect real poor and low-income people.
Well, it's not just the low-income people. It's like I know people working two jobs that can't afford the goddamn rent.
Well, yeah, quite right. You need to do something immediately. In fact, I understand an unofficial poll that I've heard about has like 61% of those phoned wanting rent control.
Yeah, and say if you're making like say $8 or $9 an hour at a job 40 hours a week, and then most of your money, I mean seriously, most of it's going to rent, right? And then again, if something happens to you and you don't have medical benefits at work, which a lot of places don't.
Wait a minute, but there is an American health care plan. Don't get sick.
Don't get sick.
Right.
I know, but a lot of people go down to the county building and say, look, I don't have any money because all my money's going on rent. Well, what's your income? Well, my income, it looks okay on paper, but it's all going to rent. Well, I'm sorry, but you don't qualify for free medical care.
Well, why don't you move to Modesto?
Oh, not me.
Well, all these people, don't they understand that you know, times change? We have a situation here where, you know, people have to go to their own income levels. I mean, I'm tired of hearing you whiners on the phone who are constantly, you know, groaning about the poor and the rents. And, you know, if you can't take the heat, get out of the county, man.
Well, why can't we? I mean, it's like, let's just bring Skid Row here.
Well, that's the whole point. We don't want you people mucking up our downtown area.
Yeah.
Anyway, I want to thank you for calling in, Merlin.
All right, buddy.
Hey. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Still tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, in spite of the dead air. Hey, regarding the coffee clutch, that's the court hearing that's coming up on Tuesday, I have a press release here I'm going to read to you in case you haven't been following that. There's actually a number of things have been happening around the coffee clutch. I got a number of press releases here. We had one dated March 21st, one dated April 10th, and one dated May 20th. You'd think that I would be satisfied with reading just one, but no, I'm going to snow you, and the reason I am is because this is the last Bathrobe Spears Broadsides show that we're going to have before this issue is decided. So I'm going to run through it pretty thoroughly. However, first, this.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, I'd like to make a quick comment about the caller before last, Steve Elliott.
Uh-huh.
Or on his behalf, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I used to have a neighbor with that name who lived right next door to me before I got thrown out of a place for helping people get ready to court back in Scott's
mm-hmm.
Creek days.
Uh-huh. I think it was a different Steve Elliott.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Maybe not.
No way to know. But two things. It shouldn't be required as far as court goes for him to show he's disabled. Just bring the sheet from the hospital from this last visit he was describing, and I think a statement, that's sworn to be the truth from someone who knows him over a period of time recently. I know there's this backlash against the Federal Americans for Disabilities Act, but still, it shouldn't take much in court to show that, in that sense, he's disabled. Get that ticket out of the way, maybe, and then think about how to change the whole situation with
Definitely.
That officer.
Definitely.
Also, I wanted to comment that ibuprofen will eat holes in your stomach real fast, so
Ooh.
Don't ever take it without some bit of food, a cracker, or couple peanuts.
And if you're homeless and poor on the streets and begging anyway, it may not be so easy to get that food.
I understand that, but I've also had this happen to me. And so maybe switching to Tylenol for a day, which sucks for your liver, but unless you already have liver problems, it could save your stomach. The best thing is to buffer it with food.
Uh-huh.
A lot of water might help, I don't know.
It's
a dangerous drug.
Unfortunately, I don't think Steve has a radio, so he probably isn't listening to this, but he will probably be in court on Tuesday morning at the Coffee Klatch, and if you or others show up, maybe you can do a medical assistance team, or at least advisory.
Well, I'm not a doctor or a lawyer, don't get me wrong.
I wouldn't be talking to you.
Impossible.
I'm not too interested in doctors or lawyers. I'm interested in people who have some knowledge about, based on their own experience and the experience of other people on these issues, so. I've got to reveal your identity to the masses here. You are, of course, Linda LeMaster, formerly head of the Homeless Issues Task Force, co-founder.
And continually an advocate for Housing Now in Santa Cruz.
Yes, Housing Now. And also you're working with the Monday Morning Group, which is planning a town hall meeting in June.
Yes, June 29th.
On homelessness.
Supposedly.
And I guess you also were at the Sacramento, California Homeless Civil Rights Organizing Project / Housing California, or CCRAP, as I call it.
I went there and crashed to the conference only to be welcomed with open arms once I got there, but only by the poor people, the group you're making fun of.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm making fun of not the poor people, I'm making fun of the bureaucrats in that group who aren't really that poor, a bunch of poor people. Some of them are, plus many of them are, in fact. But the reason that I'm revealing your identity is because I got an email from you, I guess it was earlier today or last night, that talked about the death of an activist in San Jose. What did I call her? Turnaround and Turner.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what I had a name for her. She's been an activist for a decade or more. A big woman in many ways, both physically and with a big heart. Lived her last few years of her life in a wheelchair. I wonder if you wanted to talk a little bit about her and what. I know there's a memorial today for her over in San Jose. CHAM, the San Jose Community Homeless Alliance Ministry, is having a memorial that is taking place even as we do this show. But, do you have any thoughts on that?
You might note their recent success as a group, too. I don't know if you share with your listeners what you emailed back you were going to share. That's a pretty good acknowledgement.
Unfortunately, I don't have that email with me.
I got to spend some time with Anne between various meetings. Most recently and significantly, we're both on the board of a statewide organization called Women's Economic Agenda Project. They're focused mostly in Oakland, but Ann and I were trying to keep them honest as far as having us, low-income people, and people from other cities besides Oakland on the board and on their board of directors, and also involved in some other activities. And I think Ann is a good example, as people I've known in this county are, of how the system will open up to you as soon as they know you're going to die soon. And just to illustrate this, in her case, although there's more than one example in her life, she was unable to get housing, and she's been living and working and building a community center with her family in a pickup truck with a cab over for several years. And finally, when her doctors were consistently saying your days are numbered and throwing out specific numbers, then the city found her a little place to live.
I know the last time I saw her, one of the last times I saw her, she had to have oxygen with her, and she was still tooling around in her wheelchair to different protests against police abuse and so forth, but she needed oxygen, and she's a woman of what, 250, 300 pounds? She was real big.
Well, I weigh 230, maybe more, but yeah, large, and part of this is a contributing factor to her death. She had diabetes and some other medical problems. And I forget the ones mentioned in her in the news about her passing, but she and I had talked about the diabetic problems and circulatory problems.
Well, I think she was there when we got arrested on one of the in the mayor's offices in San Jose as we attempted to get Mayor Gonzalez to.
She was. I saw your photos.
To deal with the to deal with the issue of. Not even talking about affordable housing or the criminalization of the homeless. And eventually, of course, a year and a half later, CHAM won a remarkable victory by getting Gonzalez to completely back down and dump $13.8 million into very, I think it was very low-income housing,
right.
Or extremely low-income housing. And maybe you could talk a little bit about what this memorial is about today. I know that you were trying to get over there. You guess you haven't been able to, but maybe you can bring the memorial over here by talking about it on the radio.
Yeah, I've got a few things going here that are... to remember Anne already. Anne got appointed despite her involvement with groups like CHAM and the Labor Party to a city, you know, sort of like their equivalent of the Homeless Issues Task Force, one of these blue ribbon fronts, so the city government didn't have to deal directly with people's concerns, but they do have a legal responsibility. This was a housing committee, and it had a mandate from the feds as well as Gonzalez City of San Jose, and through her presence on this board, they managed to pull a lot of the money that trickles down still, as if Reagan were still there, for housing that usually gets spent on affordable housing. She managed to make them channel it into some low-income and very low-income, these are legal concepts, these phrases, housing. And that's a major accomplishment. I've tried to do that with our city for years here, and the best I could do is get, like, the potential for two units the year Linda Edwards died, and that was thanks to Catherine Byers before she seemed to get sick of the subject of homelessness. So I know, in a sense, what she was up against, and I imagine in such a bigger city, it's even harder because people are even more out front and competitive about shunning or trampling on homeless people. But, you know, she might be alive today if any housing had been available. If the family had been allowed in the SRO anywhere in the city, for example. If the community center that she had helped build, first get and then build and open up to different special ethnic and cultural groups, had permission to let a few people sleep in overnight, she might be alive. We have a long way to go.
Wow. You were making some distinctions. The memorial that's happening today over in San Jose is talked specifically, as I read the email from activist Sandy Perry, about the particular need for extremely low-income housing, or maybe it's very,
very
low.
Very.
You want to talk a little bit about that stuff as you understand it?
Well, more than I just said.
If you will.
I don't know. Just think of the people you know who are homeless, and think about, well, why don't they have housing? The email I wrote to you talked about the creaming process, and there's a lot of places. One of them that I've seen up close is across the street from Staples and Live Oak on that frontage road, or just around the corner from it. I guess that would be on Chanticleer 17th, where they take the money from the federal government that's for affordable, low, and very low-income housing, and they make sure that the people who get in the housing are retired people who qualify for affordable housing. And there's no effort to make sure that the other two groups of people with even less incomes, like say someone on SSI like myself, where am I going to get housing in this city for less than $700 a month? You know, nowhere. And I mean, I prefer to live in this city. I don't want to live where there's no sidewalks. I already have back trouble, you know. And what about the people who would be eligible for GA, except you can only get it for 3 months, and you can't prove you're crippled because you can't get into the doctors because you're crippled, and you can't hold a job down, and you already know that because you've lost a bunch, you know? You just give up, and you go out in the field, or worse, become dependent on the homeless services ghetto. Or, I mean, not to knock them all together. As an entry place, I think it's important. But as a chronic support system, I think it dehumanizes. And that's the best service you can get. And it doesn't include anywhere to sleep, you know, in our county. I don't know San Jose. But the money that is meant, that taxpayers pay willingly in our country to provide housing for these people, is all usurped into the few people, you know, the top of the pyramid of poor people that can help developers make a profit. And they're seen as better tenants, too, you know. While there's no basis for this statistically, landlords think that if you're old, you're a better tenant than if you're young or you're a single mother. It's crazy. Or if you have a pet, although that pet may have helped keep you alive when you're having to sleep or camp outside, you know, it might keep you from ever getting a home when you're finally able to try to look for one. So anyway, I think the whole pecking order for money for housing is corrupt, but I also feel that since we're paying for it, we should do everything in our power to shine a light on it and get it back to who it's supposed to be for. You know, people shouldn't have to wait till they're deemed almost dead to get shelter or a roof. And this motivates me when I'm not homeless.
Definitely. And of course, originally we were talking about Ann Turner, who died, I guess, a couple days ago.
Yeah, I guess.
And is,
2 days ago.
Is this memorial in San Jose talking specifically about... Is it has have a specific demand that it is presenting to the city?
I don't know. They'd be silly not to. It's at a Methodist church. Anne has a husband and two sons who are grown or almost grown. And I would think from Sandy being close to her and the people she always worked with at the South San Jose Community Center she helped build, that it will help organize people. But I don't have that information. You must have got more information than I did.
Just the email from Sandy Perry that you forwarded,
mm-hmm.
which I don't have here, unfortunately.
It says a memorial service at noon. So I would urge everyone listening, you know, if you know somebody that's homeless, that you can see them deteriorating because of it, you know, they're kind of in the same boat with Anne. We have a society that becomes compassionate after it's too late to help.
Right, well, that way it's easier to kind of keep the bodies rolling forward and keep the space open, you know. I guess that's the cynical view.
I share your cynical view, but I don't think it has to be that way. And, you know, as you know, because we've squared off about this before, as far as I'm concerned, I don't care if it's one body at a time. We have to move this boulder and let, you know, most of the buildings that aren't people's private residences, and some of them that are empty all night long while people die because they're outside. It's absolutely absurd. You know, we talk about how primitive or backwards other nations are, and yet we do this to our own people. You know, even to our war heroes, you know, people we really need to show that we care about, we trample on them.
Indeed, Michael Tomasi at City Council frequently has something to say about that.
Wow.
As an old vet. And a salty-tongued one at that, a homeless vet. I know that you also have been working in two other groups, the Monday Morning Group and the Homeless Working Group of the Green Party, and there's been some controversy around those two groups. I've essentially been explicitly excluded from one of them and inferentially excluded from the other, so I can't really give much of a report on them, but perhaps
well,
you can.
Well, I haven't been to their meetings since you haven't, the Homeless Working Group, but, so I don't know much more than you do.
Oh, really? Because I know that they have been communicating by email, some folks, the treasured few, the inner circle. It kind of seems like scan all over again, unfortunately. But
yeah, they're having a hard time being organized, I think. And
they're having a hard time being open.
What?
They're having a hard time being open, not being organized.
Well, not to mention any of those particular things, which
right.
I'm not
well, that's what
fight.
I always mention those things.
But, yeah, part of why you're effective. But, I think that, you know, if you're registered green, you just start asking some questions.
Well, you try that, you're likely to get excluded from their group and dissed big time. I know that when I registered green, that's what I got. And I guess...
it sounds like you're the main press they get, so...
Well, the issue, you know, has, of course, been a long-standing one that Becky Johnson brought up, which was that Mayor Fitzmaurice, and I guess also Ed Porter, another Green Party-endorsed candidate, have refused to take action to end, modify, or even discuss the city's anti-homeless sleeping van, the law that criminalizes sleeping outside or in a vehicle between 11 and 8:30. And this is in direct contradiction to the Green Party platform. And when this issue was brought to the Green Party Homeless Working Group, I guess, you know, they worked on accountability procedures, and they talked a bit about, you know, well, maybe we should write Fitzmaurice a letter and invite him to the Green Party Homeless Working Group. They ended up, of course, going to Fitzmaurice's office and spending an hour and three quarters there in a session that, for example, Becky Johnson couldn't go to because she's barred from those offices, even though she's a member of the Green Party Homeless Working Group.
Three of you are
I'm also barred.
From city council campus.
Well, Becky and I are Green Party members, but, you know, Bernard is not. But it's
It was a pretty exclusive group above and beyond the three of you who can't even meet there. I had been asked to come along to a meeting to help think up questions, but it wasn't something that there was a sort of open door to Green Party members about. But I want to throw something else in. I went to a statewide meeting, the Green Party plenary, sometime last month, doesn't seem like long ago, and that's pretty much what happens around the state. In a nonpartisan election, Green Party members who are a little more involved than those who get elected, I gather, try to urge their electeds to honor the party platform, but they can't. They have no tools by which to make them do it. So it's a nightmare.
I have to differ with you. I think every Green Party member who wants to can get his or her ass in front of the mic at city council.
Oh, I don't disagree with that.
But you may not disagree with it, but you haven't done it, and nor has any other Green Party member other than perhaps David Silva. And Silva, I don't think, gets into direct discussions with Green Party Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice publicly.
Well, he's been so abused, you know. I mean, physically abused. He's been dragged out of there.
What I'm saying, Linda, is that the Green Party does not come forward and use the obvious public remedies that they have available.
Right.
And that includes you, and that includes every single member of the Green Party other than myself and Becky Johnson. And I guess that's one of the reasons that the Green Party is so nervous when we come forward, because they think somehow we're blowing the whistle on their bullshit, which, of course, we are. But the main reason is not to blow the whistle on the Green Party's bullshit. It's to blow the whistle on Fitzmaurice's bullshit. And Fitzmaurice is the person who is endorsed by the Green Party and backed up by the Green Party, and who could actually, I think, be held accountable by the Green Party, just by not some formal process, you know, such as you suggest doesn't exist, and I can understand that, but by coming forward publicly. But, you know, you and others are unwilling to do that, and I
have come forward publicly, but I agree with your
not in the way I've suggested you haven't, but yeah, I hear you. I know that what I heard about this sort of secondhand about this, they had an hour and three quarters meeting with Fitzmaurice trying to ask him questions around the sleeping van.
So how come you get to hear this and I don't?
Well, because I have my sources, you see. But, you know, I didn't get a lot of details. What I got mainly was that Fitzmaurice essentially reassured everybody that, you know, he needed to get the votes, and he needed this, and he needed that, and that everybody should come and do more lobbying and do more work on the issue. And that, you know, he didn't, however, it seemed to me I got no clear answer from the person I talked to about what he said regarding the contradiction between his position, which is keep the sleeping ban or not raise it until somebody has the perfect solution, and the Green Party platform, which is no sleeping bans, don't criminalize homelessness. It's just wrong to do that. You know, while people are looking for houses and struggling to survive, you don't criminalize the essential life functions. So Fitzmaurice, by the way, for those of you out there who want to do something now about it, can be reached at 420-5017. That's actually the whole city council. But he'll hear it if you put the message on the line. You can do that now. It's a 24-hour message line, 420-5017. And, you know, it's hard for me to think of Fitzmaurice without feeling angry, because he is such a major hypocrite on this issue that I just, you know, I feel increasingly pissed with him. And if you're pissed with him yourselves out there, you can not only call up, but you can come to the City Council Coffee Klatch evidentiary hearing, which is the only day we're going to have in court. That'll be at 8:30 on Tuesday morning. And Fitzmaurice will be there because we have subpoenaed him. He has tried to quash the subpoena, but we have said, and the judge has agreed with us, you have to be there because we think you are the person behind this. Nobody's being harassed.
So you're saying he'll either be there or he'll be in contempt of court, right?
Theoretically. It would be nice if Stevens, our judge, had the guts to do that, but since Stevens originally put this injunction down, I have my doubts. The other thing I wanted to ask you about was the Monday morning group. That's the group that explicitly excludes me, but that has been supposedly working with the city council and with church members and
leaders. Well, they're not
leaders.
Working with the city council anymore. We gave that up some time back.
To do a town meeting. Oh, why don't you give us an update?
About that or the whole thing?
Everything.
Well, one Monday morning at 8 a.m., that's when we have our meetings, and right now they're at the Coral Street shelter in the little house in front, because it's between phases of construction, so it's available for meetings. More people would be welcome, by the way.
That's
and
the
especially
dining,
more people that have had any experience with homelessness.
That's the dining bay of the Homeless Services Center at one.
No, not the dining bay.
Ah.
The little cottage-shaped house in the front that faces the bus stop.
Oh, the former main offices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it used to be offices.
Right.
And right now it's just kind of, I don't know if it's condemned, but it's not in use. So we get to have our meetings there near where homeless people are having breakfast.
So that's the first building that you actually see when you come to the Homeless Services Center and walk in. It's on your left, as I recall.
The cottage-shaped building that faces bus stop at Coral Street?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, there's about five things going on there.
So every Monday, but I think it has to be said, not this next Monday. I think you guys are taking
except,
a break.
Oh, except memorial service in honor of the veterans.
Right.
Anyway,
so not tomorrow, but a week from tomorrow at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Right, a week from Monday. And we're planning a town hall meeting, among other things, and that's scheduled for June 29th. And I'd say listen for free radio future about where it's going to be, because the person that was going to get the site has only been asking churches, so we don't have a confirmed site yet. And with the holiday, we might not have one till a week from Monday. But what we wanted to do, I guess different people have a different vision, but we want to get people together who want to do something about homelessness but haven't yet, with people who've been trying to fight on this front, this movement, I consider it. And we have the objective of some short-term goals, since all the other people we find working in this county aren't dealing with immediate and short-term. And we've pinned it down to a few particular things, which include decriminalization, like the camping ban stupidity, and which includes some sort of, general or mass shelter. People call it mass shelter. I don't know how massive it'll be, but more shelter. And we've given ourselves a deadline by December 1st, whatever that's worth. See, I've been doing this for for decades, I was going to say years. And so I get cynical easily, too, like you were saying. But if enough people come together and they actually activate their circles of friends and allies and professional buddies, we can make things happen real fast. I've seen it done. An example was the River Street shelter when the girls at the annex showed up. I guess there were guys too, but what I remember is Jane and Malou and Linda with Edwards. And, that turned that one around from an indefinite morass because some bullshit about a stovepipe in 2 days.
Actually, I remember that very well because I was arrested there along with about seven or eight other people. That was New Year's Eve, 1988-89. And what happened was it wasn't a huge town meeting and a bunch of notables all sitting together and, making noises at each other that had an impact. It was rather people saying, this damn thing should be open, open it up now, and they did, very shortly after we were arrested, and eventually we all beat the charges, except for Brian Koepke, who pleaded out. But what I'm saying is that I'm concerned that I've seen the mission statement, not the mission statement, I've seen the original priorities of this group, the Monday morning group, which had to do with ending the sleeping ban. Mm-hmm. I think you originally called yourselves the mainstream abolitionists.
I wasn't there with that.
Right. And it was originally a group formed by Dan Alper and Michael Schmidt and Joe Schultz and Lydia Blanchard and other people of this sort. And, pretty respectable types in many ways. They had, regular jobs, regular business people. And they realized that the law that criminalizes homeless people at night is just crazy and wrong, uneconomical and abusive. I mean, you can name 100 different adjectives, or at least a dozen. And they sat down originally to go after civil rights abuses. Now I hear this big, gloppy, schloppy deal about they're going to have a town meeting on homelessness, thank you very much, which is a way of completely diluting any real impact.
Well, we don't know that it'll dilute anything until it happens, really.
No, I think you can tell by the agenda what's going to be diluted.
What agenda?
You have a series of breakout groups you've already set up which has
yeah,
already diluted the
more
original
breakout groups in
which
has
diluted
people.
The original purpose of the group. And I that's one of the reasons that, of course, I was dumped from the group, because city council wanted to dilute it by removing the camping ban and only talking about the sleeping sections of the camping ban.
Well, it didn't take too long, both with your presence and with your absence, for people to figure out that we didn't need the city council determining or limiting what came about.
You know, I still hear conversations between members of your group talking about going slow and talking soft and not offending the city council and giving them an out.
You're kidding.
Oh, I heard a conversation
that are active
near your very doorstep on that subject actually recently, and I got to tell you that I'm not terribly hopeful, but
I say this
what we really need, of course, to perhaps counterpoint this is to provide a counterpoint, is to get some real significant mass protests going. And
I don't think those things work as counterpoints. I think they work in tandem.
Noel.
And I think that you're right, mm-hmm. that without that you just named, people taking action and standing up against the absurd.
Right. Unfortunately, nobody's.
It doesn't matter how long people talk. I agree with you there.
Nobody is organizing those protests. In fact, the only activists I know are putting energy into these two groups, the homeless, you know, the Green Party Homeless Working Group, which is essentially engaging in the defense of Fitzmaurice, though it may seem to be doing otherwise. And actually, this doesn't seem to be doing otherwise.
I don't know.
There's no resolutions coming out of any of the Green Party to hold this guy accountable or any of the other members of City Council accountable. And similarly with the Monday Morning Group. But, you know, I wanted to run something by you, Linda, and maybe I should do it on the air so other people can call in.
You're welcome to try it. I might not answer.
Okay. Well, why don't I do that on the off the phone? You have a radio there, right?
Yes.
And let me do that, and I will take some more calls.
Okay.
Thank you. Is there anything more you want to conclude with?
No, I just want to tell you that I don't believe... I don't agree with you that there's no room for talking in this movement. I do agree with you that nothing gets done from talking. But we won't get any more people helping without taking some time to check in with each other. Mm-hmm. So that's it. That's it for me.
All right.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye.
You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is the probably long edition of Bathrobus Pier's Broadsides today, because our talk show hosts that normally follow this show are not coming on, so I'm getting more time. I'm going to answer this call in just a moment. Caller, want to note with respect to the last caller, Linda LeMaster, thank you very much for calling in. No, I'm not saying talking isn't a good idea, but you don't want to spend 5 months talking, as this group has, and without doing something.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. This is Chaim calling.
Hey, Chaim.
How you doing?
I'm good. Now, you're working with the Monday Morning Group, too.
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
It seems that we're going to have this town hall meeting at the Holy Cross Church.
Uh-huh.
Tentatively made some agreements with the administration there, saw the hall. It's centralized enough for homeless people to come to. Mm-hmm. It's not out in the townships where it would be a big hassle for people to come.
And you've been quite an advocate for making sure that homeless people are, in fact, a large part of this process.
Well, this Monday Morning Group used to meet at a restaurant. And I thought that was just ridiculous, and it was my push to have them meet over by the Homeless Resource Center there, where homeless people could, you know, speak for themselves and not be spoken, you know, about. And
I think you also wanted to make sure that they actually made it to the town hall meeting, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, having the town, I checked out places, you know, out in the burbs to see if it was possible. And, you know, it just wasn't. And Holy Cross is—they're involved. They want to be more involved, and we're going to have this town hall meeting, which everybody is welcome to come to, the last Friday in June. And
where is this? At what time?
Well, I guess it 9:10 o'clock in the morning exactly. You know, the minutes and all that, we're not really sure. Lunch will be provided; it'll be free, mm-hmm. And people are welcome to come in and add some intelligence to this. Hopefully people that, you know, really need this town hall meeting will be there, homeless people, you know, specifically.
Originally you were going to limit, I should say, that the group was considering limiting the number of people who are going to come?
Well, they still are. But, you know, you can't limit the number of people who are in need. And whoever shows up at your door, you open up your door and they come in. And, yeah, it was going to be limited to maybe 150 people. But if there's 100 people there, if there's 200 people there, it's all good. It'll all work. And hopefully we'll come to some conclusions, like we got to get off our butts and do something really fast. really fast. Right, and I think the churches who have been, you know, who at least speak about being on the forefront of doing things for the poor and the homeless need to, like, move a little bit quicker, you know, before more people die and, you know, stop speaking from their books and, you know, and start doing the action.
Now, Chaim, you yourself were involved in actions in Baltimore to feed homeless people. You want to recap a little of that?
Yeah,
maybe
sure.
Maybe give us an update if you have any news on that.
No, the feeding is still going on. There's a group in Baltimore called the Environmental Crisis Center, and they give away, you know, homes to the poor, and they have a food bank and so forth and so on, and they also feed the homeless in front of Baltimore City Hall. And they've been doing that for, oh, God, almost 10 years. Anyway, Mayor O'Malley of Baltimore decided that it wasn't pleasant enough. They're trying to sell Baltimore for the Olympics. To see, you know, homeless people in front of the City Hall is not kosher. It's not healthy. So he ordered us to move to another location, and we basically told him he could, you know, he could take his edict and shove it up his ass. And we refused. The police came out there. They threatened to arrest us. The cameras were rolling. They backed off because of incredible embarrassment. You know, the press just buried the mayor. The Baltimore Sun, the African American paper, all the newspapers, the small ones, the big ones, all the advocates from the entire area, Washington, Philadelphia, New York, came down. We had about 250 advocates, including, you know, homeless people, you know, and the mayor backed down. Anyway, from that, the mayor had to do something, and I guess he pushed and so forth and got approximately $28 million from Washington, you know, to work to do some work with the homeless, and things are happening. It's